We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. I am, as always, your host, Matt Harvey, and I will be curating for you a fine selection of these strangest news samples, a charcuterie board of stupidity for you to sample. You are, of course, joining us towards the end of November, and recently we just had World Philosophy Day, a day I am sure you're aware to study and celebrate the perspective of philosophical reflection. So we here at the Bearer of Weird News have collaborated a series of ways to celebrate, depending on some of your worldviews and philosophies. The classic way, of course, is a quiet moment of contemplation and meditation, but there are some more interesting ways. First way we suggest is to attempt to build an elaborate Rube Goldberg machine. The repeated attempts and failures to create a fun and overt way to do a simple task will test your patience to the limit, but every time you drop a piece and trigger the machine, knock over a domino, accidentally walk backwards into a piece of track while laser focused on a different thing that you were building, will be a great test of your stoicism. Yes, your desire to accept things that come your way with grace and aplomb will be truly tested this World Philosophy Day. A second example would be, a vast plate of feastly goods awaits your hedonistic brothers and sisters and others who celebrate their hedonism on this World Philosophy Day. And it doesn't stop there. You can gather as a group and further indulge your hedonistic impulses in any manner the group deems appropriate. Tired of the commercialization of World Philosophy Day? Well, you aren't alone. Destroy the wheels of capitalism and decouple your existence from the commodification of belief by burning one of our Down with Capitalism badges with your fellow Marxist celebrators this World Philosophy Day. Don't see the point of celebrating? No worries. Stand around with your fellow defeatists, watching the celebrations of other philosophies, and ask each other, what's the point? It's our World Philosophy Day celebration for defeatism. You can't see the point of saying no. Tired of an overpopulated and busy world? Don't worry. None of them even exist. Probably. Not in any way that you can be sure about. Join with the potential creations of your own lonely mind in an increasingly empty world this World Philosophy Day and celebrate solipsism. At least you know you'll attend. Feeling small, insignificant, staring at an open, vast, empty night sky. Join your fellow cosmic specs for World Philosophy Day as we celebrate cosmicism. A special treat, as this year's guest speaker will be The Void, with some new talking points on just how small and insignificant the audience really is. Also, keep an eye out for Labour Appreciation Day celebrations, an occasion to respect labour and celebrate production. On this day, school children prepare cards and gifts to distribute to people who work in the labour sector to show appreciation for their work and contribution to the country. And your boss may help celebrate with a pizza. Labour Appreciation Day. No more than 2 slices per employee, please. And November 25th was International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, which, of course, is celebrated in the traditional manner by men asking, when is International Elimination of Violence Against Men Day, huh? Please do join Bearer of Weird News host Matt Harvey on one of his many tour locations. Hello, that's me. I'm Matt Harvey. I'm going on tour this year with my show Wage Against the Machine. It is a storytelling and stand-up show all about times that I've worked in terrible jobs that have been exploitative, about my $20,000 robo-debt, and about the time that I broke a 100-year-old roller coaster. Yay! It's going to be a fun show. I'm really enjoying putting it together and touring it. I'm going to be in Newcastle. I am going to be in Wellington. And I've officially locked in a venue for the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. I'll be at No Vacancy Gallery. Details will go up online. I'll start spruiking that a bit closer to the show. It's a little bit early in the run to start giving dates on any of those, but that's starting in March. I'll be touring around, so hopefully I'll be able to make it to a festival, to a city near you. If you want me to come out and bring a show, that's fantastic. Let me know where you live and we'll try and figure that out. Until then, I will be the bearer of weird news. First up, we have the headlines. Unilever says it will expand its trial of a four-day work week to staff in Australia after a successful 18-month pilot in New Zealand. Just another example of something moving to Australia after it gets real popular in New Zealand. Unilever reported that there were strong results, meeting business targets, absenteeism dropped 34%, and the staff in the trial reported a 33% drop in stress and a decrease in work-life conflict of 67%. The remaining conflict comes from working at a company with known conflicts of environmental reporting, habitats and resources, palm oil, pollution and toxins, human rights, workers' rights, supply chain management, irresponsible marketing, animal rights, animal testing, factory farming, antisocial finance, controversial technologies and police activities. But they have an extra day to go to therapy, so they can handle that much easier than they could before. A new study examining 82 mass murders that occurred at least partially in academic settings throughout the world found that most mass murderers and mass shooters did not have severe psychiatric illnesses. The study was published in the prestigious, well, this ought to make a great joke magazine. Upon hearing the words mass shooting and academic setting, Republicans went into autopilot and held a press conference stating, "Now isn't the time to speak about such matters," and offered up their thoughts and prayers, lamenting nothing could be done, and offered the first 100 concerned voters who called their office a bulletproof Make America Great Again hat, while simultaneously saying this was the greatest country in the world. It's a tale as old as time. Former Health Secretary Matt Hancock has been suspended as a Conservative MP after he joined the cast of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, continuing the ancient tradition of sending unwanted Brits to Australia. A set of studies has failed to find evidence that cannabis has creativity-enhancing effects. But the researchers did find that cannabis elicited a sense of joviality, which in turn made cannabis users perceive their own ideas and the ideas of others as more creative. Or at least, that's what the scientists told each other during the deep study process. And now they have to justify the research money that they spent on weed. A Parisian undertaker cycled around Paris with a bicycle hearse that she hopes will soon bring a new green way of conducting funerals. She already has official authorizations to use the bicycle hearse after adapting it to French regulations. This involves adding ashtrays, wine holders, and a basket where you can put your baguette at the front of the coffin, just in case you get hungry, while peddling a dead body through the city of love. Très chic. After Twitter was bought by Elon Musk, he started publicly brainstorming ways to make money, announcing changes to his blue checkmark model of verification. Instead of verifying a person's identity, the new model will verify they have $7.99 per month to waste. Elon Musk's plans to charge for verification have been slammed by Eric Idle. Yes, that Eric Idle of Monty Python fame. After Musk claimed he got the idea from a Monty Python sketch in which a man goes to a clinic where people pay for confrontations with a professional arguer. Eric Idle was frustrated. He openly admits to stealing from Monty Python, but failed to note that the important element that is missing from Musk's version of the sketch is the lack of a complete professional to mitigate and control the argument. Which actually makes Musk closer to most comedians now, as they have all done a version of an old Monty Python bit, but worse. South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff said that four short-range missiles fired from a western coastal area flew around 80 miles toward the country's western sea, bringing them up to more than 30 missiles a week. Seems Korea has taken on the Civil War 2022 rebrand after the usually reliable US has failed to clarify the validity of rumours that they were reinvigorating the franchise. Makes sense really, as K-pop and Korean dramas are popular right now. A Korean twist on a Civil War reboot could be the next big thing for a franchise. Tony Abbott has proposed a plan for all school leavers to serve a period of national service on a podcast by the Institute of Public Affairs, saying it was time that Australia had a conversation about a program of compulsory service. This is a surprise term from the normally right-wing former PM, but having every citizen serve their national service as PM is a great way to ensure a universal basic income by giving everyone a PM's retirement fund. Seems the UK has been inspired by our model, even making it more efficient by only making people serve work for 45 days in order to qualify. You can really churn through way more of the population at that rate. It's very respectable. A new study has revealed a tenuous but plausible link between picking your nose and increasing the risk of developing dementia. Seems cases where picking at your nose damages internal tissues, then bacteria have a clearer path to the brain. Upon reading, the cause of dementia may have been right under their noses the whole time. It really put humanity's nose out of joint. If the link to humans can be proved, they may even win a Nobel Prize. The field is usually tight, but I'm pretty sure they can win by a nose. It's not a problem for them. But to our hardcore nose pickers, there are a number of studies that link all sorts of things to dementia, including not being able to hear properly when it's noisy, apathy, not living in affluence, or how rare you like your steak. So nose pickers, there are lots of options for getting dementia. You can still have your pick. And those are the headlines for today. Let's get into the bigger news. First up, totally reassuring climate news. COP27. Yeah, those things are still happening. Seems COP26 was as effective as its 25 siblings before it. But I am certain we will nail it this year. And not idle with the future of the species, because it helps us win votes against the ones who don't support it. 27th time's the charm! And it is on that note of optimism, the United Nations Secretary General and Multiverse Don Corleone, where his business is saving the planet, Antonio Guterres, called for a climate solidarity pact between rich and poor nations to limit the severity of global warming in a speech at COP27. You can tell he was serious because the proposal emphasizes the rapidly closing window to limit the extent of warming, and the fact that he said it's either a climate solidarity pact or a collective suicide pact. Things are getting serious. Then he rung a giant gong and said, "Guterres has spoken, now choose." And while referring to himself in the third person like that, and the use of props does make him seem like he's really showing off more than trying to save the planet, his point does stand. Referring to the future of humanity as a collective suicide pact does surely make some headlines. Some desperate and much-needed headlines that could have been written roughly 20 years ago. And Guterres wasn't done there, oh no. He really had been sitting around with his speechwriter and thesaurus to come up with as many fun and nihilistic phrases as he could to describe the future of the planet. More like he is trialing out some pithy epitaphs for the celebrity species humankind. Fun ideas like, "We're on the highway to climate hell with our foot on the accelerator," and "Humanity has a choice, cooperate or perish." What a fun COP this has been. Humanity has famously been good at cooperating, allowing us to overcome many historical obstacles like murdering other species and building gigantic wonders that stand the test of time. Oh, wait, no, that wasn't cooperation, that was slavery. Sorry, we're really good at slavery. Very good at it. It's just a shame we have finally backed ourselves into a corner we can't slavery our way out of. Oh, not yet anyway. Not until we bail on the former home of humanity and rocket pants our way to Mars, where we can start a new society. Without woke rules like, don't ruin the planet, and slavery is bad. Ugh. But all this rising heat will sure teach those snowflakes, won't it? And that is how the war on woke will end. In fire. And blood. A solidarity pact would involve countries pushing to slash greenhouse gas emissions in such a way to meet the Paris Agreement 1.5 degree target. A particularly frustrating idea, as it would give Parisians an even bigger reason to brag about their impact on culture, and their inbuilt nihilism won't even allow them to overtly brag about the whole thing like any other human would. On the official agenda for the first time was climate damages, known as loss and damage, where wealthier nations are being called upon to provide financial and technical help to developing countries for them to transform to cleaner energy solutions. This has to be why we refuse to stop building coal mines. You see, the US, Canada, and Australia are the worst offenders among rich countries, skimping on their share of tens of billions of dollars pledged to help developing nations fight climate change, right? We'd previously pledged roughly US $100 billion in climate finance each year, starting in 2020, to help poorer nations adapt to climate change and mitigate its effects, but are still at billions of dollars short of that goal. Australia came third on that list, with a mere $1.7 billion US dollars shortfall. Just days after COP26 last year, former US Vice President and environmentalist Al Gore said he was disappointed Australia had failed to increase its emissions targets. But here's the thing, Al Gore. Fuck you. You think we weren't all disappointed when you failed to guide America away from the darkness in the year 2000? Instead, we got George W. Bush, who dragged us into near-perma-war over oil and resources, which drove us to value fossil fuels. We continued to build our economy around them more and more. The continued reliance on the fossil fuels felt like good times would never end, and then we went from having the front-running research into solar power to burying it with our guilt and shame over the wholesale slaughter of indigenous communities upon our arrival in 1770. So we polluted, and we were responsible for the emissions of other countries via our sale of fossil fuels. And I am not sure if you've been paying attention to the budget talks, but we are having a cost of living crisis. We cut $2.4 billion from hospitals during the pandemic. We need the extra coal mines so that we can save up the money for all the pollution that we have not only been responsible for, but the future emissions that we're currently digging up now. Australian negotiators have been among those pushing to include the discussion of loss and damage from climate change to be included on the agenda for the first time. But we need more time. So you don't understand. We dug up a lot. A whole lot. We need time. We need to really save our money. This isn't stop buying avocado toast to save for a house money. This is huge. We probably need to wait out a few of the smaller Pacific nations, which are closer to sea level. When a few of them die off, we'll have less reparations to pay, and then we'll be able to start making our alimony payments, we swear. We swear! And while the talks coming out of COP27 are seemingly happy, in the same way that a forced smile on a waitress as a sleazy customer who just left a tiny tip asks, "What time do you get off work?" and promises to show her a good time, because she knows that she'll get no support from management if she were to complain, as the store's nearly dead and it needs every customer it can get, so it has become a safe haven for sleaze, then yes, it's happy. Attendees at the COP27 climate meeting found that the conference internet connection blocked access to the global rights organization Human Rights Watch, as well as other key news websites needed for information during the talks. The list of blocked sites also includes the blogging platform Medium, Egypt's lone independent news outlet Madamassa, and the Qatari news outlet Al Jazeera, as part of the the Egyptian authorities' efforts to separate vital climate negotiations from human rights issues. If I'm honest with you, Egypt, you're doing it all wrong. You don't need an authoritarian government to control and clamp down on media outlets and go so far as to block independent media outlets within the Wi-Fi at important global events. No. The simplest way to do it is the Australian way. Join the Murdoch Empire. With nothing but a few continuous donations from the Conservative government, you'll get all sorts of benefits from joining the Murdoch media family of climate change denial and human rights cover-ups. Need some local news reporters to deny everything that an opposition government might have to say about you and the levers of power? We got 'em! Opinion pieces disguised as news with misleading headlines because, let's be honest, nobody's reading past the headline. We got 'em! A controlling share of national and local media outlets which swallows up and destroys voices of opposition while effectively censoring the dissident voices of the media? You better believe it! Plus, you get plausible deniability! Because the press is still free to write about whatever they want, and both you, the leader of the country, and them, the leader of the media empire, can say that you are separate entities and do not work for the others despite the obviousness of the truth. People will eat it up because media literacy is hard to teach, and people who work terrible, low-paying jobs don't have the luxury of time to research things, so find it's much easier to take the media at its word. And with Murdoch Media family branches in countries like Australia, the UK, and America, you can guarantee there will be a series of countries willing to look the other way regarding your human rights atrocities, as they have enough of their own that nobody talks about, and wouldn't dare open up that door which is bulging to the point of bursting at the bottom of the stairs labelled, "Here be atrocities, do not enter unless dumping." And even then, it is only enough to quickly jam something new in there and slam the door shut, lest some of them get out. Not that anybody would be there to report on it, except maybe The Guardian. And nobody listens to them, because they're part of the woke agenda. Moving on now to RoboDebt news. RoboDebt, the trauma that just keeps giving me nightmares, giving me a hole in my bank account, giving me another form of generational trauma to hand down to my children. So generous. RoboDebt is in the news again as the Royal Commission has wrapped up, and boy oh boy, is it delivering the goods. While the final report on the commission isn't due until the 18th of April 2023, that just means that we have months of treats ahead of us. Treats that come in the form of public servants feeding us bite-sized chunklets of schadenfreude. It's like watching an episode of Utopia, but those guys only hurt themselves. Long-term listeners of the show will be very familiar with RoboDebt, as we have covered it a number of times. But for first-time listeners, RoboDebt simply is the name given to a series of illegal debts given to welfare recipients, which led to a series of those recipients committing suicide and lawsuits where the government had to repay most of the debts generated by the system. So all that, but with jokes! And now we have a Royal Commission with the Albanese government coming good on its election promise to publicly humiliate the Morrison government by using his mortal enemy, the law. Seems government departments failed to obtain high-level external legal advice about RoboDebt despite their own lawyers questioning the legality of the scheme more than a year before it was implemented. But in what has proved to be the coalition's go-to move, they buried their head in the sand, along with their moral conscience, any sense of responsibility, our treatment of refugees, and Australia's dark past of murdering Indigenous people. Must be crowded down there in the sand. This is why we are always digging stuff up. We need room to bury our increasing collection of secrets. This was raised on the first day of the Royal Commission, a real home run early on in the Royal Commission. Now, we don't want to get too ahead of ourselves, but I can see a mini-series or a documentary podcast retrospective created by Mark Fennell in the future. The advice was that the use of average data was not supported on policy grounds and could cause reputational damage to the Department of Human Services, now known as Services Australia. A big ask, given it's the department that handles everyone's favourite and most well-respected government departments, Centrelink, Workforce Australia, and the ATO. It's essentially the department of punishing the poor. The Commonwealth acknowledges that raising debts purely by averaging taxation data was unlawful, and that imposing a penalty fee based on the information that it had was unlawful. Unlawful in Australia means it's a breach of civil law, which are disputes between people and or companies over money slash compensation slash damages. Now, it turns out the inspiration for RoboDebt came from a particularly stupid place. So this was all around the time the copyright holders had been sending speculative invoices on a mass scale to people who may have illegally downloaded films that was known at the time as the Dallas Buyers Club saga. The two events have similarities in that they both use mass information grabs of Australian citizens, and both were so poorly thought out they failed to achieve anything except waste a ton of money while trying to recoup supposedly lost money. The earliest reference so far to the origins of what would later become RoboDebt was a DHS minute prepared for and signed by the then National Manager of the Business Integrity Division, Scott Britton, on June 30th, 2014. Britton would go on to be so proud of his work and that of his number one in charge of RoboDebt, Jason Ryman, that he'd nominate Ryman for an Australia Day Achievement Award.
In recognition of Mr. Ryman's significant role, his boss, Scott Britton, nominated him for a 2017 Australia Day Achievement Award.
And that's a real shame that he didn't get it. Seriously, I can't think of a better day to honour someone who helped build the systemic oppression and persecution of an entire section of Australian society than Australia Day. In the great tradition of people doing something terrible and then moving on without consequence, Scott Britton still works in the government. His current title is, appropriately, Chief Risk Officer, Branch Manager of Fraud Intelligence and Investigations for the NDIA, the insurance agency of the NDIS, which, if you haven't heard, is doing an excellent job of keeping people from committing fraud by stopping as many people as possible from getting access to the payment. See? Nobody can accuse him of not doing his job. While we're talking about jobs being done, Cameron Brown, former Director of Payment Integrity and Debt Management at DSS, learned of the idea to tighten Centrelink welfare debt collection in late 2014. He was almost immediately concerned. That is a quote. Presumably, he took a moment to internalize a moment of incredulity or make an inquiry as to whether it was a fucking joke or not before allowing the reality of it, the idea, to fully sink in. Otherwise, surely he would have been immediately disturbed. Brown sought legal advice that turned out to be damning. The idea, and this is a quote from the legal advice, may not be derived within the legislative framework. Just a nice legal way of writing, are you fucking kidding? Who would try to do this monstrously unethical thing? Have you considered alternative means of building up the government's coffers to the point where they overflow, like, I don't know, taxing businesses' profits, or cutting public servants' pay, or before immediately trying to claw back the scraps given to the poorest members of society? Then that advice disappeared. What happened to this legal advice is one of the central questions being investigated by the Royal Commission. Kind of like a giant game of Cluedo, where we all try to solve the mystery of who killed the hopes and dreams of an entire class of people. The hearings have revealed there were several crucial crossroad moments at which RoboDebt could have been averted or stopped much earlier than it was. But then a hero came along, a man who never met an ethical conundrum he would be stopped by, a man above all the politic of what is and isn't lawful, a man of the people, in the same way that Judas was a man of the apostles, but definitely had different intentions in the end. A little known hero named Scott Morrison. The idea of automating debt against the poor was the kind of idea that Scott Morrison could get behind. He is a man of the church, and if there is one lesson that Jesus taught us, it is to let go of our attachment to material possessions. For it is easier to get a camel through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to get into the kingdom of heaven. And Scott Morrison was preparing so many people to get into heaven. So he catapulted a fledgling debt recovery idea into a serious policy proposal to be considered for the upcoming budget. Now, on the third day of the hearings, the inquiry was told that nearly 4 years later, after the rubber debt scheme was up and running, the Department of Social Services received external legal advice, also casting significant doubt on the scheme's lawfulness. Taking the Wile E. Coyote running over a cliff approach to the law. If I don't look down, then I can't fall. It's why I never look in my wallet. That way there's never the possibility of no money. I wouldn't want to ruin the possibility of that by confirming it. That's how it works. The inquiry heard the law firm was paid for the draft advice, but it remains unclear whether it was finalized or how it was subsequently used. In a maneuver now known as the Coalition Special, they like to bury things so much, I think it's fair to assume that they are in the pocket of Big Shovel. The problem is, this was in the days before Morrison hired his wife as his personal empathy consultant, after which he never made another mistake again. What's that? Oh, well, that's a lot of... Oh, dear. Well, let's not dwell too long on that. Let's get back to the matter at hand. Morrison designed the scheme to claw back any dollars that may have been paid out to people who earned more than they anticipated, with an estimated $1 billion to be recovered. And he was really going to need that $1 billion because he had a lot of barrels to pork, hypothetical car parks to build, and mugs about being in surplus to sell. It's not easy being a small business operator. Occasionally you need to reach out to your community and unlawfully take money from them in order to keep you afloat. This task was undertaken by Morrison as though its accomplishment would single-handedly solve the national debt. At the same time, companies that had avoided or even evaded tax, estimated to be in the trillions, were ignored. Who says the coalition has no empathy? I see a ton of empathy on display. Trillions of it. At this point, it becomes more like the largest heist in history. Morrison gathers a crack team of MPs. He would use all of their skills, cunning, and sociopathy to ensure the heist went off without a hitch. And who are Morrison's four? Well, there's Michael "The Open Door" Keenan. After temporarily pausing the process following mounting criticism, he reinstated it rather than discontinued it. There's Alan "The Mouth" Tudge, who took to making ostentatious public announcements to broadcast the lengths to which the Morrison government would go to ensure that nobody got away with an extra dollar, as follows. It will find you, will track you down, and you will have to repay those debts, and you may end up in prison. There was Christian "The Ignorer" Porter, who ignored all criticism, such as from the administrative tribunal, like it was a rape allegation from a 16-year-old, and implemented the scheme. And lastly, Stuart "Relentless" Robert. At one point, Stuart Robert tried to take $7,000 from a dead person, when about a year later, he'd claim a total of $62,814.52 for his residential internet costs. But at no point did he apologize for RoboDebt. Instead, he defended the scheme. Now, granted, this isn't the feeling everywhere in the department. Serena Wilson, a former Department of Social Services official, who was given the damning legal advice about the RoboDebt scheme being unlawful, told the Royal Commission she lacked the courage to personally tell former Prime Minister Scott Morrison the plan could be unlawful and was now ashamed, which is rare get for someone from the government. To be honest, even if she'd found the courage, it wouldn't have changed anything. Because once Morrison had seen the proposal, he wouldn't give up on it. Here we have a clip.
Trying to find some money for the family.
There's always money in the robot debt.
Look, I'm sure you don't need to be told, dear listener, but this was a particularly cruel abuse of the Australian public, at scale, by their own government, which persisted and was covered up for 5 years against overwhelming evidence that it should never have been allowed to begin. Which explains why ignoring the law is an acceptable excuse for Australian citizens when doing something that causes stress, grievance, psychological harm, financial bullying, and suicides. So it is only fair the government is afforded the same allowances. We are allowed to do that, right? I can say that, can't I? Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's right. But you can't spell robodebt without robbed. That's right. And this was one giant attempted robbery. A reverse Robin Hood, taking from the many to give to the few. These thief princes. Compare this to the recent data hacks of companies like Optus, Medibank and Woolworths, which used information they had no right to access on mass scale as a means of taking advantage of the vulnerable population for the benefit of those using the data. But when the government does it, even after deliberately ignoring the advice of multiple legal entities and bulldozing your way through little people, then it's different somehow. At least according to them. Apparently it is better to think of this as a stuff-up and not a conspiracy. Now I am tempted by this thinking because, well, for a conspiracy to be pulled off, it requires cunning. And certainly a lack of bragging, right? You can't brag about successfully pulling off a conspiracy.
And these corrupt people will never take a camera and turn it around and show them how many people are here. They never do it. They're corrupt. They never do it. You know, I never knew the cameras because this took place right from, they never want to show how massive our crowd was. You know the biggest crowd I've ever seen? January 6th. And you never hear that. It was the biggest, and they were there largely to protest a corrupt and rigged and stolen election.
Well, I mean, not if your country is functioning, you can't. Pretty sure. As someone who received one of these debts, it's hard to agree with this, but this wasn't a conspiracy, or a cabal, or even a collusion. But it was a classic coalition scam, yeah, that's right. This is fraud. That being, any act of deception carried out for the purpose of unfair, undeserved, and or unlawful gain, while a conspiracy is the act of two or more persons called conspirators working secretly to obtain some goal. Usually understood with negative connotations. So it's definitely more in the fraud category than it would be in the conspiracy category. None of these people were working together. They all hoped to fly under the radar until their megalomaniac in charge either got bored or moved on. And he never moved on. It became his entire personality, like that friend of yours who did a trip to Europe once 10 years ago and finds a way to wedge it into every conversation you have. The bit I'd call a conspiracy didn't kick in until the government came explaining themselves. And even that is more subterfuge, with the final goal being avoiding responsibility at all costs. Suddenly, everyone knew how to work together to use the most weasel language that they could to avoid all the responsibility. Even after the scheme was wound up, Secretary of the Department of Social Services, Catherine Campbell, made sure to skillfully dodge blame with the language used to describe its unlawfulness, preferring the phrase, legally insufficient. You know, the way that we describe Mickey Rooney's portrayal of Mr. Yunioshi, not as racist, but insufficiently racially sensitive. or my bank account not as unfull, but rather financially insufficient, and the Morrison government not as unempathetic, merely as empathetically insufficient. Rubber debt is a clear case where the fundamental principles of governance, which is a shared view between citizens and the state, has failed. Trust between government and the people was undermined, and let's be honest, there wasn't a lot to work with in the first place, due to an inability to establish a line of communication that is open, lacks an ego-driven sociopath looking to score points and climb the political ladder, and land as many photo shoots as possible on the way, nor create a system to correctly identify and review debts owed to the government that might take more than a couple of seconds to verify. Something like that might have stopped robo-debt victims from needing to borrow money or use their credit cards to pay their debts after Centrelink staff refused to help with inquiries. The Maury Champion reported, in one case, a young woman with a $12,000 debt was told by Centrelink they couldn't help and she should just pay up. Ah yes, the why not just dive into your money pile and pay up excuse. I always forget how much money I just have here, just lying around. There's always so much of it. It's all so full. I'm not sure who snitched that I spend my evenings sitting on a pile of gold like some sort of welfare Smaug, but I'll find them, and I will bury them alive in my mountain of gold. A Centrelink employee asked, why are you hoarding resources? Don't you know there are no ethical hundredaires in capitalism? Catherine Eagle, Principal Solicitor for Perth's Welfare Rights and Advocacy Service, said, they suggested she borrow the money. So she went to a payday lender and borrowed the money. Apparently working with a predatory payday lender felt safer than dealing with a government body responsible for the keeping of the poor and the vulnerable. After all, their motto is giving you options. We just didn't read the fine print that states, while Centrelink isn't one of those options, death is. Miss Eagle said, the woman didn't seek any advice at the time but became terrified when money started turning up in her account years later as a result of the class action payments. She was worried that she would be hit with another debt as a result of the money that she was receiving. Centrelink has people at the point where money appearing in their bank account terrifies them. A new economic strategy where we, as a society, are so traumatized by the sudden appearance of money in our accounts that we will spend it on any old shit, be it random knickknacks, donating to horrible political parties, the latest exploding phone from a tech company, and our most desperate attempts to separate ourselves from our money may even be to pay media or donate to Wikipedia. But don't get your hopes up, guys. We'll probably just end up spending it on a Back in Black mug. This new economic model is called Angstonomics. And it's how we're going to save the economy. And finally, worker exploitation news roundup. Many companies have been doing that fuckery again, messing with people's wages in the follow-up to a pandemic. With a recession on the horizon, seems like a particularly messy way to run your house corporations. You can't be angry that people don't want to work if every time they show up, you charge them a face-punching tax to not punch them in the face, and then you go ahead and kick them in the face instead. So, who's been fucking around? Let's have a look. Domino's! Oh no! If Domino's goes down, where will I get my average pizza whose best quality is the cheese inside the crust? Well, Domino's has gone and told its franchisees to pay workers according to workplace agreements it struck with the fast food union rather than the award rate. Which was wrong. So very wrong. An industrial scale wrongness resulted in their employees earning significantly less than the minimum wage. Significantly. Ouch. There are a lot of things your employers could do with regard to the minimum wage. Like, for example, pay it. but convincing franchisees to pay less than it is what we in business call a big business no-no, from Billy Big Book of Bad Business No-Nos. Or for the younger ones, Fisher Price's My First Workplace Exploitation Playset. And now we have a class action trial. We love a good class action here. It's like unionizing, but it takes longer, it's slower, and is generally much more publicly damaging of reputation for the company. The case revealed tens of thousands of staff has been underpaid, alleging that drivers and in-store staff were underpaid up to $11 an hour or $10,000 a year, almost a full year's rate, depending on where you live. Investigations by The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald detailed arrangements between big business and the shop assistance union, the SDA, affected more than 250,000 workers, which shouldn't surprise any of us who pay attention to this sort of stuff. The SDA has a very questionable reputation, but please, guys, don't take that as a full representation of what it's like being in a union. There are much better unions. It's just the SDA. Well, the SDA is a big... Anyway, the SDA is a problem, but there are plenty of good unions. During opening arguments, it was revealed Domino's actions amounted to misleading and deceptive conduct. For example, the in-house bookkeeping system defaulted to the agreement wage, which is less than the award wage. A beautiful example of automation fucking up the lowest paid workers. Once again, a new tradition that I am not super on board with, even if we keep winning high paying class actions. It's just easier to pay us properly in the first place. Look, capitalists. Not every industry needs to have its own Robodebt-style scandal. Spoiler alert, the lesson of iRobot was, robots are efficient, but they are cold and lack a human touch to dealing with situations and should not be the final voice of responsibility in big societal moments. And if you fuck around, Will Smith will fuck you up.
Smack the shit out of me.
Domino's claims that even though information about the wages may have been conveyed, many franchises did not read the information. Why bother chasing it up and confirming? Making sure that the business is run to a respectable level and doesn't bring your franchise into ill repute, why would you want to do that? And possibly even to a lesser degree, their employees don't, you know, starve. Bunch of woke nonsense, if you ask me. They said as each individual franchise operated differently, what happened at one outlet cannot be applied universally. I mean, it's not like staying across the award wage of your business is a huge part of running a business. If it were, more businesses would do it. And if there's anything you should have learned from listening to this show, it is businesses be stealing. You know the old cliches. You know how society is. Women be shopping, men be murdering women, and businesses be stealing. Now, as a result, in 2016, an estimate by investment bank Deutsche Bank found that Domino's was saving more than $30 million a year in wages by paying workers under its workplace agreements rather than the fast food award. So now, when people ask you why you don't like Domino's, you have two reasons, and one of them won't be related to obnoxious internet culture. Alright, who else has been fucking around? Let's have a little look-see. It appears to be... the University of Melbourne. If you could get a degree in pretension, you'd get it there. Uni Melb has started paying back 1,500 current and former workers $22 million for unpaid work, bringing it to a total of $31.5 million in underpayments over the past year. Melbourne is one of around 20 universities nationally that have been caught up in wage theft scandals. In typical Uni Melbourne style, though, the people who have been ripped off by Uni Melbourne are looking down on the people who had to get ripped off by other universities like Monash or La Trobe. Acting Victorian Secretary for the National Tertiary Education Union, Sarah Roberts, said insecure work was at the heart of this wage theft scandal, going on to say that greed was at the brains, a tiny set of balls was behind the courage, and that they are securely hidden in a fancy underpants that was the wizard, in that they seemed to be the thing that the story was revolved around, but ultimately they had no impact on the story at all. What can you do? There is no place like home. Alison Barnes, the National Tertiary Education Union National President, said wage theft needed to be made a federal crime and that universities had it baked into their business models, as do other businesses like hospitality, retail, tourism, journalism, writing, mining, legal, marketing, real estate, sales, sports, sorry, women's sports, healthcare, baking. Actually, it might be easier to just list all of the industries that hasn't been baked into. Politics and CEOs. And maybe lobbying. As great as it would be to see some managers and CEOs go to jail for underpaying their staff, the real issue would be that Australia's whistleblower laws are still so poor, they'd end up sharing a jail cell with them. And they'll likely get a harsher sentence than the CEOs. Speaking of horrible hospitality, fast food restaurants and cafes across Brisbane have been underpaying workers. See, I wasn't lying when I did my big fun list before. And the Fair Work Ombudsman has recovered more than $400,000 in wages. Nice work, Fair Work Ombudsman. Of the 77 businesses impacted across South Brisbane, Fortitude Valley, Sunnybank and the CBD, 75% had breached workplace laws. 75%! Just feels like they aren't trying hard enough. Those are amateur numbers, Brisbane. It's Australia's motto, right up to the federal government. A, B, C. Always be corrupting. Seems the most breaches were failure to pay penalty rates or casual loading and underpayment of the minimum hourly rate. Probably because they forgot that penalty rates existed after the last government buried them deep in a mine. That's why we keep digging those mines, people. We need a hole deep enough that they will never be found again. Because if we, the people, start like digging to find our own secrets, then the coalition will come up and stand behind us and start calling us hypocrites about how now we're digging up the earth. When we do it, it's a crime, but when you do it, it's fine. So, you know, we've got to make that decision. For those who are unsure, there are often clear signs when a breach is deliberately happening. We call these employer red flags. If you encounter an employer red flag, make like Jordan Peele's breakthrough film and get out. Things to keep an eye on. The employer might not give out payslips. Maybe they have two sets of books, or they tell a worker to keep their pay a secret. Ooh, some classic red flag behavior there. As well as calling the workplace a family and excessive finger guns. Those are on the lesser scale of the red flag chart. Sandra Parker of the Fair Work Ombudsman said, employees can't pick and choose the laws they follow. Going on to clarify, that is, of course, unless they're good friends with politicians or make big donations or are Harvey Norman. Right, Jerry Harvey? Isn't that right? How are you going paying back that stolen JobKeeper, Jerry Harvey? Huh? How are you going with that? Huh? Jerry? Harvey? Now, moving on, who else has been fucking around? Oh, Deliveroo has entered the chat and entered voluntary administration, leaving thousands of restaurants that used them and 15,000 local riders who were exploited by them in need of a new system of oppression they need to get used to. Which is the hardest part, really. You get a certain kind of numbness to the exploitation that you're under and suddenly it gets ripped out from under you and you have to get used to a whole other horrible different kind of exploitation. It's hard. It's hard out here for a pimp. The email they sent out said, "This has been a difficult decision to make. We have enjoyed serving you the amazing food that Australia is known for." Hang on, wait, what? What? The amazing food Australia... Australia has a cuisine? What is our amazing food on offer from Deliveroo? I never saw a place offer up some delicious crocodile or kangaroo or emu, nor any of the wild meals that they serve on Survivor when they do a version of it in Australia, like kangaroo dick or witchetty grubs. Something that might actually serve to prove to be a distinct and interesting presentation instead of 1,000 American-style burger outlets. I don't mind a couple, but I'm gonna switch it up a little bit. Deliveroo blamed challenging economic conditions, which requires us to take difficult decisions. And what are those conditions? Oh, we'll have a look-see here. The incoming gig economy laws in the first half of 2023. Ooh! Which prompted Deliveroo to end its email, citing the main reason it was actually leaving was this kind of woke madness where the government expects companies to be accountable for paying their employees, even when they aren't employees, but simply people who work for them on a frequent basis. Madness. Despite starting in the market ahead of Uber Eats, it fell substantially behind. I mean, it's hard to feel bad for Deliveroo, the company that tried to oppress its workers, not as workers arguing that the riders overwhelmingly want flexibility over money and rights, and that only 47% of gig workers surveyed wanted to be classified as employees, as opposed to food delivery robots that were powered by oppression. But it's hard to stay ahead of the competition when your major rival is an unscrupulous bastard captured and turned into an app like an evil genie whose wishes always come true, but with a catch. Oh, you want flexibility? Done! Now your death is super flexible. It will come at any moment. How's that for options? After all, a 2019 WorkSafe Australia study found road transport workers remain the most likely to be killed at work, with a fatality rate of 9.4 times higher than the average across all industries, and that does include going to war. Wild. Why would you not want to get paid properly or any sort of benefits for those sort of risks? Firm Corda Mentha has been appointed as the voluntary administrator. But administrator Mark Corda said Deliveroo was unable to achieve sufficient market share in Australia to develop a sustainable business, which is a reverse News Corp who has the opposite problem. No matter how much market share they take up, they just can't develop a sustainable business. With the UK parent company deciding to wind up Deliveroo Australia, administrators said they had no alternative but to cease operations immediately in the absence of financial support. They should have spent some money donating to the Liberal Party. Then they'd have found some financial solvency. Look, they would have given them money, and then we would be conscripting Centrelink recipients to use as delivery riders for people with real jobs. If I understand the rhetoric used against people on Centrelink, this simply shows a lack of business foresight and willingness to do what it takes to survive. The decision to cease trading immediately means all of the company's employed staff in Australia had their employment terminated suddenly. I guess it is fortunate that Deliveroo had so few actual employed staff. Now, I am not one to gloat over people losing jobs, but it must really suck for the people who suddenly lost their work security and livelihood without a moment's notice, as though they were nothing. Maybe in their next job, they won't act like some sort of reverse Icarus of integrity, diving too close to the bottom of the scruples barrel in their search for money. Unfortunately, the administrator is working to calculate and secure the company's employed staff's outstanding pay and entitlements. It's a shame, really. Whereas delivery riders, considered contractors, not employees, would be treated as unsecured creditors. And any money owed by Deliveroo would need to be fought for with a proof of debt from the administrator to make a claim. They will not be guaranteed to receive the money that they are owed in full. But lucky for them, the administrator said riders could keep their company supply kit. Oh yeah, baby! So if they have a dress-up party coming up where they can go dressed as themselves when they were desperate enough to dream that this could be a viable form of surviving, or they could dress up as the ghost of failed capitalism past. Ooh, what a bunch of cunts. And that is the end of the episode. Thank you so much for hanging around till the end and listening. If you've enjoyed this, please, as always, tell a friend, share it around, share it on social media, give us a rate, a reviews, whatever medium you're listening to it on, do the things. It's thumbs up, rate it 5 stars, or 1 star. That's your options. 5 stars, 1 star, all or nothing. Please do come out and support the show by going to the live shows. I'm considering doing a little Patreon where I'll put bonus stories up, stuff that you wouldn't be able to access unless you had access to the Patreon. So that's just something that might happen in 2023. But we'll keep an eye out. Until then, the best way to support is definitely to come out to the live show. So I'm doing Wage Against the Machine. Locked in is Wellington and Newcastle and Melbourne International Comedy Festival. But we'll be adding more festivals soon. See you out there. Have fun. Look after yourselves. Stay safe. Goodbye. Thank you.